The U.S. economy officially made up all of the jobs it lost during the pandemic last month, but the labor market is still tight. Our next guest says part of the reason is that the share of people working or looking for work still has not recovered to pre-pandemic levels, and that means there are fewer workers competing for open jobs. But where did all those workers go? We'll ask our guest about that and hear what a smaller workforce means for the people who are still in it, businesses and the economy. And you can join us at any time during this conversation, 1-800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Did you retire during the pandemic, maybe a little earlier than expected? Did you leave your job because it wasn't fulfilling anymore? Did you find a gig job instead of a full-time job is better for you and your hours and just your living? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Lydia DePillis. She's a business reporter for the New York Times. And Lydia, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
I'm happy to be here.
So take us back to the start of the pandemic. The pandemic, we lose 22 million jobs, and this supply of labor, how many people are in the workforce? What has happened to that supply since then?
Right. So as you said, the number of jobs did reach its pre-pandemic high, I think, in July, and it exceeded that again last month. And yet, the share of the American population that is working or looking for work hasn't reached the same level. So the in pure numbers, it works out, just to be clear. And that's how people are able to fill the jobs. But the population has expanded even more. So that doesn't bode well for sort of future productivity and economic growth when you have more people who are not working and fewer people who are working. So that's the challenge that a lot of policymakers see right now.
And Lydia, let's begin with retirements. I mentioned that before. What did we see in terms of workers moving towards retirement and even those who weren't actually at retirement age yet?
That's right. So in trying to figure out what was going on here, I broke down labor force participation by a bunch of different metrics, including age. And the age group that has declined the most and failed to recover, and I don't mean that in any kind of like pejorative way, they just haven't, is folks over 65. And you might think, well, their retirement age, why does it matter? And it's actually interesting that folks past retirement age had been working at higher rates in the years prior to the pandemic, because folks were living longer, maybe their savings aren't stretching as longer, people are healthier, at least they were before the pandemic. So that's a reversal of that trend. And the folks, you know, just before retirement age, probably were seeing some drop off around 62, 63. The earlier ones have mostly come back, like the 55s to 61s or so. And so that's a number of factors, right? Like, I think that COVID probably pushed people into retirement at the same time that they saw their assets rise. If you had any kind of stock portfolio or a house, which again, I mean, plenty of people do not have, but those who are lucky enough to have those things saw, well, if I rein in my spending and maybe downsize my house, I can quit a few years early and it's going to be okay. And then of course, most in-person workplaces became a lot scarier, especially for older people. So I think that is going to take a while to recover. And it's a real hit to a lot of companies to have lost that institutional knowledge. And a lot of these folks are really experienced. So it is a blow to lose these older workers.
It's interesting as we bring this up and the callers start coming in, Lydia, what we're about ready to hear. Let's turn first to Dave in Madison, who joins us with Lydia DePillis from the New York Times. Dave, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
What's your story?
So I am a physician who retired after 26 years of practice at age 56, a little earlier than I planned to. And I think the pandemic maybe brought some issues into clearer focus, but there are also some management issues. A lot of people say never fail to take advantage of a crisis, but there was some pinching of the medical providers and lots of changes that were not very attractive to me to continue working, and had the finances to retire and just decided it was time.
And where are you at on that decision today, Dave? Do you got a lot of free time on your hands? Have you found other ways to, put your skills to work?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, everyone asks you, what are you going to do? And I've really not had that problem. I'm pretty active, and I kind of decided that I wanted to retire before I wasn't healthy enough to enjoy it. And I think one of the comments that your expert made is, you know, the shame in this is that the lack of experience, I got better in my job as I got older.
Right.
There really wasn't an appreciation for that experience, at least in my opinion. And I think they could replace me with someone who was a little cheaper, but probably not to be egotistical, but not as good at that stage in their career. And that scares me a little bit. I don't think that we value experience enough.
Dave, I very much appreciate the call. And yes, there is, Lydia, this idea that with people retiring a little bit early, like Dave did at 56 as a physician, there would be some institutional history that may be lost. There obviously some experience that goes by the wayside. But what effect did this wave of retirements have on some of these industries that older workers were in?
Well, I mean, Dave, I'm glad that you called in because this is absolutely a huge problem in the healthcare sector, right? It's not just in the physician ranks, but also in nursing. And so it's a really scary place to be in when you're not sure your hospital can offer the staffing levels that you would need to keep to stay safe, basically. And, you know, and I think that loss of physicians matters, especially in rural areas. So, I've heard a lot about the changes in the healthcare system, consolidation, private equity ownership that have worsened working conditions. And that is a big problem along with the sort of ageism that exists, you know, more broadly. And to your question, I it's a problem in many fields where the workforce is aging and they can't afford to lose anybody, let alone their most experienced people. So we see a teacher shortage now, you know, a lot of longtime teachers just saying like, forget it. I mean, young teachers too. Government service is something that's a very old field in many places, even something like construction, you'd be surprised, and farming. A lot of knowledge in those, 50 years and up kind of people. And if they decide to just bail, then it is a serious problem.
Yeah. And if this, we had Dan, we had another caller earlier who retired early as a teacher. I think it was Danny called us, and because of the pandemic and other factors in schools, he said he misses his students, but he's happy about the decision he made. You also talked to Thomas, who worked in healthcare. Tell us about his story, Lydia.
Oh, so yeah, he actually, Tom Strait from Florida, he left a career in restaurants, and he actually switched in his 50s and went through several years of school, some remedial college even, to become a cardiac sonographer, which is something that's really a valuable specialty. And he actually left the workforce in December 2019 when his hospital asked him to move closer by to be on call. And he's like, I don't want to do that. And then COVID hit. And so he just said, screw it. It's not worth it to me to continue in this field as much as he enjoyed it. He downsized and moved to Florida, and he thinks that he could totally still, he's still healthy. He could pick that up again and start working somewhere, because he apparently gets calls all the time at pay far exceeding what he started out at. So it's nice to know that some people are willing to return if it becomes worth it to them. But, as he put it to me, retirement is pretty great, and he doesn't see a need to come back.
Lydia DePillis, our guest from the New York Times, and you can join our conversation about the missing workers in our workforce at 1-800-642-1234 if this is you, or if you're a business that is feeling the pinch from the missing workers in our workforce, please, by all means, join the conversation. You can also email us ideas@WPR.org. Next group of workers that seem to be missing from our labor supply would be working-age men. Where did they go, Lydia?
This isn't as severe a drop in terms of a percentage, but it is a much bigger group, right? It's the folks between 25 and 54. And the men in particular, their participation rates have not returned to pre-pandemic levels, while women's, interestingly, have exceeded them, and not by a ton. And this could change in the coming months. Some of these numbers are sort of volatile. But it is a sluggish recovery, especially with so much demand for workers out there. And, you know, it does contradict some of the you know, stories that I think are still true about women in particular having to shoulder the burden of childcare through the pandemic with all the kinds of unstable childcare and schooling available. Some of them did pull back from the workforce earlier in 2020 and 2021, but largely kept working and doing all the childcare. You know, we know from time use surveys that it's not like men were really picking up the number of hours they spent on housework. So this is sort of a puzzle. And, you know, it does differ by education. And this is a cross-cutting factor. One possible cause here is that folks with college degrees, those jobs did recover in full and quickly, where people in the, you know, service sector and manufacturing, things that are sometimes in person or making stuff, that took a lot longer. And over the years, women have outpaced college degree attainment men. And so that is partly why they may have been advantaged in this labor market. So that's another piece of it. And, you know, it is interesting. There's some data to suggest that in college educated households, some men may be starting to stay home because their women might out earn them. And so if anyone decides to take some time off with the kids, it can be men, but predominantly that does tend to be women. And then there are other factors that are long running in nature that actually have been depressing male labor force participation for decades, starting long before the pandemic.
That's Lydia DePillis. She's a New York Times business reporter with us today to talk about what happened to the workers who dropped out of the workforce during the pandemic. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Is this your story? If so, join our conversation at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue, maybe hear from you as well, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're talking about the pandemic economy and why some workers have decided to stop working altogether. Lydia DePillis is with the New York Times Business Desk. She stays with us, has been investigating it, but we want to hear from you as well at 1-800-642-1234. Is it long COVID that's kept you from working? Have you decided your old work wasn't fulfilling and looked elsewhere? Join us, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Erica now in Lake Tomahawk, who joins us. Erica, good afternoon. You're on the Central Time with Lydia DePillis.
Good afternoon. I'm 68 years old, and I've been trying desperately to retire for quite some time, and they can't. I haul propane in way up northern Wisconsin and up into the UP, and they simply can't find drivers. And I'm not going to throw the company under the bus. They're good people. Not everybody hires geriatric transgender truck driver.
So, Erica, you're 68 and you're looking to retire, but is the money too good to sit back right now because finding other drivers is just too tough?
No, well, they can't find drivers, and I think the loyalty is more important to me. I'm, like I said, I don't want to throw this company under the bus. It's a small family-owned company. And they can't find people that, A, have experience, and, B, can pass a drug test.
Well, see, this brings up a great point, Erica, and I thank you so much for sharing. You're driving at 68, a propane tank up in northern Wisconsin, and having a tough time filling those jobs of drivers and those with CDL licenses. What are some of the other reasons for this, Lydia? Where did the drivers go?
Well, driving, and thank you for sharing your story, Erica. That's amazing that loyalty keeps you working when you could be cooking back and you know, gardening. But so trucking is an interesting example because there was huge demand for trucks, especially in 2020 and 2021, when everybody couldn't spend on vacations and going out to concerts. So instead they ordered stuff and it had to be delivered somehow. So this is a really interesting example where, you know, people, trucking companies had been yelling about a trucker shortage, and I use air quotes here, for years. And the problem was when you dug down into what it's like to be a truck driver, there was huge turnover because it's a really difficult job. You have to often, if you're doing long haul, be away from your families. And it can be economically precarious, especially if you're an owner operator. So, but what we started to see in 2021 was real wage increases and real freight rate, you know, increases that made it a lot more lucrative for folks to come into the industry. So they did in spades. And, you know, now we're starting to see that roll over and people are starting to have to leave the industry again. So it's very, very volatile. You know, I hope that, you know, that maybe that allows you to get a break, Erica, at some point. But, you know, people do really respond to incentives. And it was good to see companies finally give and say, if we want more people, we truly have to raise our wages.
Well, you do not need a commercial driver's license or CDL in order to drive for Uber or Lyft or take on a job in a gig economy. Is the gig economy part of the reason our labor force has not returned, Lydia, as you see it?
So there's something with the statistics here that is worth noting, which is on the Labor Department, when they calculate workforce participation, all they ask is, are you working, right? So they're not saying, they don't really, I mean, they do ask further questions about that, but gig workers should be counted as participating in the labor force, right? So that wouldn't be a reason why we're seeing depressed labor force participation. Okay. It does depress the number of payroll jobs, right? So on the other side, this is some wonky like data stuff, but when the Labor Department puts out its jobs report, the top line number of employment, that is people who are on payroll with companies. And so that would exclude gig work. So that I do think actually underestimates the amount of work that's happening in the economy because people are doing work that where they're self-employed, basically. And so the data around that is also hard to parse and not fully complete, but I think there's enough sort of private indicators from companies that track this stuff to show that even if things like Uber and Lyft haven't totally rebounded because folks just don't need to be at as many places in their biggest markets like New York and Chicago, delivery drivers for platforms like DoorDash probably have expanded far above pre-pandemic levels. Although that's, you know, they keep that kind of stuff close to the vest as well. So, but it has become a sort of popular destination for workers who, I mean, and I do think this is an enduring change from the pandemic, is that folks really, you know, see that there's a lot of workers who can work from home. If they were not in a position to do that before, they're like, well, that sounds really nice. I would like to at least determine my own hours and, you know, when and allowing me to be in school or take care of my kids. So I do think that is continuing to fuel a shift towards gig work, along with, it must be said, increasing costs, right? Like, and gig work is something that people do on top of another job that they have rather than something that's their full-time income. And so a lot of people have been telling Uber in particular that they picked up driving shifts because they needed to cover their costs.
Dan called in, couldn't stay with us, but like Erica said, that they have found that a lot of people with small businesses are really struggling as a result of this tight labor force. What are you seeing from businesses as a result of our labor economy?
Well, so for sure, small businesses struggle with tight labor markets more than large ones for a couple of reasons. One is like every worker that you have is more important to you because they might be like one out of 10 people that you have as opposed to one out of 2,000. And it is often harder to compete with the wages that bigger companies offer. And especially on the low end of the labor market, you know, increasingly you're competing with the Amazons of the world that do have the liquidity to offer $15 an hour and relatively competitive benefits packages. So it is really tough for small businesses. And, you know, they, I think, are trying to compete by doing things like offering as much flexibility as they can, you know, offering their value proposition of a more sort of familial environment, something where you feel like part of a team. Another thing that I hear often, and I'm not sure quite how much to make of it, but is that, you know, folks, especially coming out of the pandemic, do want or would prefer a sense of mission, right? And that can make up for a lesser salary if you can cover your costs, right? If it's competitive enough that you can have a decent standard of living.
Lydia DePillis, as we look at the labor force and labor supply for businesses, what role does immigration play?
A huge one. I'm glad you asked, because that is the sort of shadow factor behind all of this. And, you know, it doesn't affect, well, it may affect slightly the sort of rate, the labor force participation rate, because immigrants do tend to have a higher share, a higher share of them are, you know, work. But the bigger factor is just the size of the labor force, right? Like since 2017, when the Trump administration came in and really started to crank down on both legal and illegal immigration, relative to trends before that, we don't have about 3.2 million workers that we otherwise would have if these policy changes hadn't put in place. And you never know what, you know, there's lots of things that impact immigration, but it certainly hasn't been happening at the rates it did in the sort of 2000s, 2010s. And so those are the folks who otherwise might be working in hospitality, in restaurants and construction, and in all of these sectors that are seeing some of the biggest job opening rates in the economy.
What numbers are you looking at now? What are you working on next, Lydia?
I'm looking at the rental market, actually, for housing, right? Because rental inflation is one of the biggest things driving overall inflation. And it's one of the hardest things for the Federal Reserve to really have any leverage over. And I'm particularly focused on what that means for landlords, right? Like, because it's a diverse class of people who own apartments or houses for rent. And, you know, I think there are some parts of the sector that are rolling in money and some parts that might not have had that kind of pricing power. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, with nearly double-digit increases in rents, especially in some of these big cities, where is that money going?
Lydia, we'll be watching your byline. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It was my pleasure.
Lydia DePillis, a business reporter for the New York Times, with us today to talk about how workers are faring in the economy right now and why some have dropped out of the workforce altogether.